Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours. Hi, happy Monday. It's Executives After Hours. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. Today on the show, I had the pleasure to speak with Mr. Caleb Brecky from Speak It to Book out of Washington. Speak It to Book is the organization, he's the founder, by the way, is the organization that helps you with getting all your ideas that you have down in a book. They help you transcribe it, write it, the whole nine yards, and they can help you market it as well, which is what he says and indicates is one of his better value propositions. Also, if you want to hear the full interview, head over to my website later this week. It'll be posted. Caleb and I dive right on into a taboo topic. Number one, religion. Could be politics nowadays if you want to talk about Trump, for sure. Polarizing topic. But we hit religion instead. And I loved Caleb's openness to engage in the conversation. It could be uncomfortable. He owns it and has no problem speaking about it, so it's awesome. He's also this week, stay tuned. I'm starting my vlog series. So for those who've been following me, you'll notice I put up a presentation and I broke it down basically part by part, eight parts of this presentation I did a while back. Now I'm going to start a vlog series to go with my blog series that goes part of my weekly mailers to my network. So I feel like I have this multi-layered thing going on. I don't know. Do I have a book coming out on April 23rd? I think I do. I think it's called The Crucible's Gift. So that's what I'll be talking about and all these different things. All right. Have a great week, everyone. Thank you. All right. Here we are on another episode of Executives After Hours. And today on the show, I have the pleasure to speak with Caleb Brecky. Damn it. It's in my head wrong. Brecky. He's the CEO and founder of SpeakItToBook.com. It's the premier ghostwriting agency for thought leaders. Caleb, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. I'm so excited to have a wonderful conversation. I got coffee in my hand. I'm ready to go.
And I have nighttime tea to go to bed right after this. So we are
even better
bookending it to start it out. So Caleb, where are you exactly?
So based north of Seattle in a town called Bellingham Washington State.
I grew up in Portland, Oregon. So no.
Oh, great. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And in fact,
wonderful area.
In fact, my wife's best friend is from Bellingham. So yes. So how, were you born and raised in Bellingham?
Totally. Born and raised in Bellingham. Met my wife who was born and raised in Ferndale, north of Bellingham. We met at church when we were very young. And after, you know, chasing her down and her dad kicking me away for years, I finally got through. And he said I could marry her. And now this January, we're going on 10 years.
That's congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. I just had my 10 years last June. Not the same story either, by the way. But the dad did try to keep me away, so there is a similarity there.
We got that connection point.
Yeah. So now what was life? You know, I mean, you wear your religion on your sleeve. You own it. You embrace it. So was this something that you kind of grew up with your whole entire life?
Totally. You know, parents went to church, dragged me to church, but it was more or less when I started going to college, made my faith my own. You know, really, I look at a really simplified, religion, if you will. I mean, for me, it's Jesus, it's love God, love your neighbor. And, you know, that's about it. I think Christianity, and I'm sure lots of religions, get a really bad rap for being a, you know, hey, work to get to God, do all the right things, behavior modification. I'm really about the heart. I'm really about, seeing people, you know, if there was nothing else involved, no money, no, it just strip all of the kind of social stuff away. Like what really matters is like, meeting people where they're at and genuinely connecting with them as a human being, no matter what. And sure, I'm going to tell people what I believe. I'm going to tell people about Jesus, and what I love and things like that. But, really what I value is connecting with people as human beings, whatever they believe, and being a genuine, good, awesome connection with them as another human being. And to the point where we can actually talk about things like religion without like throwing stuff at each other and getting angry. You know, you can probably tell I'm not huge into politics and stuff like that, but I am very big into connecting with other human beings, whether they, you know, believe the same stuff I do or not. And both my wife and I are that way. One of our favorite things is just hosting people at our house. And, you know, we got these two big old couches. That was our first purchase as a married couple, was because, you know, we like to have, you know, just great conversations with people.
So, personally, and this could be a very big rabbit hole. Just I'm paraphrasing this ahead of time. My wife is a pretty strict Catholic, relative terms, I guess, but grew up very Catholic. I always say tongue in cheek. I grew up in an Irish Catholic household without the Catholicism and a touch of violence. So that's kind of my tagline for my upbringing. My mom used to say she had issues with the Pope. I wasn't sure if she actually talked to the Pope with the issues, but she seemed to have issues with the Pope. So we didn't actually ever go to church, but the moral foundations were kind of always talked about, you know, and it was there. And so for me, I went to a Catholic college. And was Western a Catholic Christian college?
No, Western Washington University. Not even close.
So all I could see was the Western. By the way, I'm like, where? I see these little small. I didn't see Washington University. Got it now. Okay. I was like Western. I didn't see the little tagline underneath it. I was like, where is that exactly? All right. And so, you know, for me in college, it was like this exploration. And so for some people, you know, especially since you didn't go to a religious institution, did you find yourself waning a little bit from religion, or did you live at home during that time?
You know, I actually did live at home. My college was in my old hometown, and it was a business decision. But my parents have never been the type to like, you know, check in. You know, you strong in your faith? Are you doing this? My parents love me, and of course, love to see me walking in faith. But at the end of the day, they're very much not. You know, we don't go to the same church, anything like that. My faith is God. It's my own. I don't look to, you know, parents, don't feel pressured, anything like that. And I think that's what it needs to be. I mean, that's my view.
But did you ever challenge it though? I mean, was there ever a point in your life where you were like, all right, what are the truths that I need? Or were the truths that I was told, like, was there ever a point where you kind of like, wait a second, pump the brakes. I need to inspect this a little bit more.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, all through college, you know, when I was, you know, that's probably the most exposed you are to tons of different upbringings, ideology, religion, you bet. I mean, that's where the owning actually took place for me, because it was the challenging. It was the figuring out, okay, what do I believe? Because there seems to be about a billion different beliefs here. And yeah, I mean, I'm a feeling type guy, you know, spiritual, but also I'm very analytical. And so, there was a great clash of figuring out, you know, what do I believe? Who am I? How does that impact, you know, who I am? And, you bet. I mean, there was a ton of that going on in college. And, you know, I just happened to spit out the other side when I found that Jesus was the only one for me. And that's how it happened.
And do you have siblings?
I do. I have two brothers.
Older, younger?
Both older, both complete grease monkeys. They work with cars. They run the family business. I was the one that went way out in left field, creative.
Did it just like not appeal to you whatsoever? Or did you feel pressure to go that way?
Not really. I mean, my dad, you know, instilled in me a lot of great work ethic and, you know, working hard, all that jazz. But, it seems like every time the family zigged, I was the one who zagged. You know, I liked sports growing up. You know, no one had played or liked sports in my family. And it was the same thing about most things. And I just happened to like to write. And it was the one thing I considered myself good at, because that's the thing. I didn't have the same skills as my brothers. Didn't really grow up thinking I was very smart, intelligent. skilled. And so writing, I looked at, that's the one thing I don't suck at. So that's what I'm going to do.
I feel like that's a good way to make decisions. I don't suck at this, so I'm going to do it. I feel like if the bar is that high, you did pretty well for yourself, really. So
exactly.
And so let's talk about this whole thing. You know, you go to Western Washington University. Obviously, economically, you stay at home, which is such a different formation. You know, I work at a university. I've worked at a couple of universities. I obviously went to university for way too long. So there, I remember at University of Dayton, which is in Ohio, the students that lived on campus and the students that didn't live on campus had two totally parallel lives that just never really intersected except for in the classroom. So did you ever kind of feel like maybe you missed something by not getting that experience?
I mean, so judging by, like, I had my friends, I never really was the type to get, you know, straight A's. Just like, I always worked really hard. I would take 23 credits. I'd work two jobs. I mean, I was always very busy, and I've always been kind of an optimized type guy. Now this is just, I would say I missed out on a lot of good things, but also, you know, and I like to drink. I like to enjoy a good time. I try not to get drunk, anything like that.
Sure.
But, the thing that I saw, I missed out the most, honestly, was waking up passed out. That's what I saw a lot in my friends. And I was like, you know, I can do without that. It's okay. And truly, but also, I will sit
down. I'm laughing because I would have been the friend you would have seen passed out quite often. So, I mean, I'm laughing because you really are okay missing that part out. Like, that part is totally okay to miss out.
It's totally okay. I mean, I like good conversation. Usually one drink gets me there, but anything more than that, I'm like, okay, no, I don't need the throwing up in the morning afterwards. Thank you very much.
So how did you decide on journalism? Because that's not necessarily the most lucrative field to go into when you first start.
I think I knew at a pretty young age that I wanted to do. Like, I grew up working at the family business, you know, bought my first car, all that stuff. So I was washing cars, detailing stuff. My family, you know, buys, rents cars, has a car lot. And I hated the work. And I realized that money was great, but I knew I needed to do something that I actually liked to do. And it came down to writing. And I had such low confidence as a kid that I was just like, well, this is what I have to do. And then I said, well, I like sports, so I combined the two, sports journalism, which, again, very low paying field, but I really liked it. And so that's why I got into it.
Well, you know, and I was gonna say that, you know, when I quit college after my freshman year, probably because I was the guy who passed out too often on the couch, and I ended up actually moving back to Portland selling cars at a car dealership down there for a year. And I remember so vividly this one day. It was March, and I walked into this car, they had like a used car shack. And this is a huge dealership. They have I think seven or eight different brands that they own down in Portland. And I walk into the used car shack, and these two guys had a rolled up dollar bill doing lines of coke. And here I am, like 19, maybe 20 at this point. I can't remember how old I was, 19 or 20. And they were like, do you want some? And it was like a movie where you just fast forward like 15 years. And all I saw was me living in a gutter or in jail. And I mean, it was very vivid for me. Like, I can't do that, because if I do that, then it's kind of like an if X, then Y type of thing. And that Y was totally not the right way to go. And so I literally walked out of there, called long distance from the car dealership to my mom, because they had moved to Chicago at that point, and said, I want to go back to college in the fall. And they scrambled because I said I wanted to go back, because they were disappointed I dropped out, obviously. And so they were like, yeah. They just made all these calls and did all this work. And they're like, whew, back on track again. But I remember just that whole world of car dealerships. This is back in 93, 94, I think. It was just an interesting world. But to your point, there's lots of money in it, but satisfaction wasn't there for you. But I kind of go back to like, okay, so then what did you do? What did you do after you graduated and you started doing journalism? Like, what was your first gig?
So first gig, well, I got some really great internships. You know, I was the type who, You know, I sent out 82 applications across the country when applying to internships.
You seem like a hustler.
Yeah, that, well, I always did. I always wanted the best of the best if I could get it. And so I ended up landing a internship with the New York Yankees, actually, for MLB.com. And so I covered the Yankees for a year. That was awesome. Back in 2007, that was a year where they had a lot of star-studded players. Roger Clemens came out of retirement. A-Rod was there. Jason Giambi, Jorge Posada, Mariano Rivera, lots of these big name stars. And that was fantastic. That was like a you know, a baseball lover's dream. But at the end of the day, I was very much a homebody, really close, tight with my family, really tight with my wife's family, and knew I wanted to live somewhere back in Washington State, which that really limited my jobs and career potential. And so got back home, got my first job, asked my wife to marry me as soon as I got it, and started that career. And after about 2 years, I got back even to my hometown where there's two jobs that fit my description, got that job. And after 2 years doing that, I just frankly, I just got bored. I kind of won the awards that I could and realized that I needed to be challenged, realized I needed something more in life. And so that's when I started writing on my own. And that began the great transition out of journalism.
So can I ask you what these awards were that you won?
I mean, just the awards that I could win. So it'd be like, you know, sports writer of the year for, you know, X amount of circulation, things like that, you know, best news stories. Just that's about as tall as you could rise as a journalist in that region.
Have you ever asked yourself what it is? Have you ever asked yourself why writing comes so easy?
I don't think it ever comes easy.
But no, what I mean, no, but you gravitate towards it, right? So, sure. So let me rephrase that then. It's a gift that you have, and you know, there's a saying that hard work beats talent when talent stops working hard. And if you work hard and you have talent, then that makes you puts you to another level. But like the way it sounds, you kind of grew up in a blue collar house, and so. In that house, was there a structure or foundation that kind of taught you the writing skills? Or again, is it something that kind of came naturally to you that you excelled at and practiced and got better at?
More or less just excelled at practice. You know, my house wasn't even really big on education. I mean, well, we were, but my parents did the homeschool route for most of my life. Mm. I think that's where a lot of my low confidence came from, because I just was always questioning, you know, is this, you know, I see all these other kids going to school. Yeah. It seems like I'm not doing too well. Feels like I'm falling behind, but I always did have a natural bent. One for the only thing I ever tested well for in my life. I mean, I always was getting really low grades, but I remember taking one test when I was something like 11 or 12 years old. And the one thing that I tested out of college with was reading comprehension. And I think that helps, just having empathy and understanding situations to where you can write with a little bit more depth. And that's what I really clung to. I said, okay, I must, you know, some sort of, you know, God put some sort of DNA in me that has this ability, and this allows me to write better. And so from there, it just was writing and trying to emulate the better writers and yeah, just a lot of hard work. 'Cause I definitely am not, I'm not anything close to a prodigy or have any sort of natural, when I say natural talent, I just mean I have the ability to work hard at something. I really don't have that, you know, that Stephen King, you are just born to be a writer type of thing.
So what did your parents think as you went down this path?
Tough. I mean, it was, you know, my mom has always been the sweet, supportive, everything. And she, even, it's funny, when I took up liking baseball as a kid, she was the type who started watching it with me just to, you know, support me. My
That's
dad,
really
more
kind.
Or less, was, yeah, it really is. It really is. My dad. You know, it always came down to, well, where in the world is the money, you know? Yeah. And he loved the fact that I was going into journalism, you know, liked that I excelled in it. But my dad mostly looked at me, you know, when I'd be playing sports and stuff, be like, you know, son, if you could apply that same ethic to like the way you work at the shop, you know, our business, like, you'd be working, you know, so much harder. You know, basically he saw my passion for certain things, but not for what he was used to being passionate about. And when I made the transition out of journalism, it was a tough time with my dad, because he was like, he didn't believe, you know, didn't like didn't think my writing was very good, was honest about it. And honestly, he was right back then, but he just wasn't right in that, you know, he didn't see the diamond in the rough that could have been. And that's really what I wanted back then. And, of course, now he's my biggest fan. He'll read anything I write and he's really supportive. So we've come a long way in our relationship and his understanding of writing and whatnot.
Did you ever resent the fact that you were homeschooled for a big chunk of your life? Just had the consequences, you know, or was it such a special time?
Not really. I mean, I don't look at it as special or like this horrible thing. Like, I wonder what life would be like if I hadn't been. I'm always a glass half full person, and I look at it, you know, my parents instilled great character in me. I have a relationship with my brothers. You know, I wouldn't say it was a bad experience. More or less, I'm just glad it may be who I am today.
Yeah. You kind of accept it for what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I went from a very low confidence person to, you know, I'm 31 and I feel like the rise has been, it's been able to be so much greater because I came from a place of not believing I could do anything. And now it seems like anything's possible. And that's a huge gap from, you know, to be able to live all those steps in between. Really incredible.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out where that lack of confidence came from, because I mean, was it just the comparison of the other kids around you that played sports and the stuff they were doing? Was it you didn't feel like you belonged?
So many things, you know. I mean, one, you know, all my friends, honestly, good looking guys. I don't consider myself, you know, super good looking. You know, my wife says that's just instilled in me because I was, you know, a little chubby little kid. And I actually went on a diet when I was like 11 years old, lost 25 pounds by the time it was my freshman year. But that's actually stuck with me. You know, a few kids back when I was young called me fat, all that stuff that stuck with me, even though, you know, after 14 or something.
Isn't it ridiculous? Like something that happened at 10 is like an anchor in your mind. I'm the same way.
It is. Yeah. It's crazy.
It just doesn't even make sense. It doesn't even make sense, right? You're like, why? Like rationally as an adult, you can say, that was stupid, but that emotion is so raw when it comes up. It's just so fundamentally it just shows how powerful your mind is at the end of the day.
Truly. My mind has power. Words have power. Definitely is going to influence my parenting and things like that.
Now, do you have any kids?
Not yet. My wife and I, married 10 years. We actually went through a miscarriage, which is tough. This past fall. Yeah. But, so we're definitely praying, hoping that becomes a part of our life before long. But, we definitely look forward to having kids.
That's awesome. I have four, so I'm happy to ship one
just
over to you for
ship
a while.
Them over.
Yeah, yeah. Give it a trial run. So try it out like training wheels, then you can give it back. So let's pivot, you know, while I've got you on the phone here, because phone, Skype, whatever, and talk about this Speak It to Book. And so I always want to say book, Speak It to Book. What is the premise of your business?
So the premise is, it's really hard not only to write a book, but to figure out all the moving pieces to it, from just the regular nuts and bolts, formatting, cover design, back cover, copy, putting it all together, but also the marketing aspect. How in the world can you use a book to your advantage, to you know, to own some lucrative space in your niche, to use as a business card, to set up a marketing funnel, which really is nothing more than how can you find the people that you can serve and bring value to most, and then build a relationship with them, a genuine relationship. And so everything from my background had led up to this, because I stopped writing for 4 years to learn internet marketing after my own books didn't do as well as I thought they could. And I realized that if I couldn't market my books, then my destiny would be in someone else's hand. And that's why not only have I continued in writing to hone my craft, become the absolute best I can be, but I've also seen the gaps where need to be filled. And one of that's internet marketing. So now I've got my writing hat, my internet marketing hat, and now I really use that to combine to reteach people how to not only just write books and what I say 24 hours of their time or less, but also frame it in a way that a book can get your return on investment, bring your actual value to the world, and build something that's greater than just a book.
So there seems to be, and you're not, you know, you don't have unique real estate here in this capacity. There seems to be more and more companies that are doing this sort of thing. So why do you think, and is it good? So why do you think that so many experts are going this route? And do you think it's good for the publishing industry to have so many books out there flooding the market?
I mean, there's always been tons of books out there flooding the market. I don't see that as a bad thing. I mean, because at the end of the day, quality will rise to the top. Either that or marketing. One of those two is going to push it. Either it's going to be quality and word of mouth, or it's going to be marketing. And frankly, there is great marketing pushes behind bad books that can do great, and a lot of great books that will never be read because of marketing. So when it comes to just books being out there, not a problem at all. I look at these ghostwriting agencies as a very positive thing, because usually the person who's going to use them, they're living a great life, doing great things, and they don't have time to put their life on pause to write one. I mean, you know how long it takes to write a book. I know how long it takes to write a book. No one who is out there busy doing something, it's going to take incredible discipline. And beyond that, the book probably will need to be shoved in the drawer or completely reworked by an experienced writer, because this person's probably not a writer. It's not their 10,000 hours. It's not their skill set. And so I think it's a very great thing, because a lot of people who would have to use a traditional ghostwriter to get it done, which is basically, here's my idea, go write it. This is making it one step more personal, where we actually base everything, spend a ton of time with the person. And you can do that the traditional ghostwriting way as well. But I believe this is a much more innovative way to get from your story to finished book. And beyond that, because the one thing no one ever asks, basically most people assume that their book's going to be a bestseller. That's the greatest place that people need to be educated in, is that no, your book will not sell just if you put it on Amazon. You need to have a very strategic plan for it to get it into the hands of those who need it most. And therein lies the marketing side of it, the funnel creation, the figuring out how to do paid advertising, because that's why it's the greatest time to be an author right now. Obscurity is no longer an issue with Facebook, LinkedIn, Amazon. You can get in front of as many people as you want. That is a gift. That is an amazing gift, where you can get in front of as many readers as you ever want, but you have to pay for it. So all you have to do is figure out how to make enough money to pay for your ads. Then you grow your platform for free. And then as you build your tribe, well, building a tribe is worth a whole lot of money in the end. And so it's hard for me. I can't turn off my creative side or my analytical side. And this is how they work together, is figuring out how to bring great stories to life, but do so in a sustainable way that's actually going to keep food on the table as well.
Are you ever just amazed that, because this is something that I, you know, before I wrote the book, I understood before I wrote the book that the marketing will be the only reason why the book ever sells. It's not enough to write a book, good or bad, it doesn't matter. If you don't have the framework and structure to do the marketing, then it doesn't really matter. And if you're not using the book as a marketing tool for other things, then you're kind of missing the point. Are you ever surprised when authors come to you and don't realize that in today's world, that is a necessity for success?
I used to be surprised. Now it's, but truly it happens so many times where I'm like, you know what? I'm pretty sure this person thinks they're going to be a bestseller right when they start. And truly, I probably talk myself out of clients because of it, because, I want to be completely upfront with people and honest. Listen, you know, everyone has something great to say. That doesn't mean people are going to, read it, embrace it, find it. They need, you know, you don't just open up a store and don't put out a sign that says what you are. And then you don't get on Facebook and then put the kind of the online movable billboard across people's screens all the time. And then, you know, have retargeting and all the stuff that really needs to happen if you're going to reach your people. So I would say, again, that's the biggest area that people need to be, you know, they need to be educated on. And frankly, there's a lot of companies out there that have preyed on this particular problem with authors, because you see a lot of people selling the bestseller. And I'm straight with people. Yeah, we can make people a bestseller, but it doesn't cost near as much as what you think it will. But it also won't get you near as much to what you will. You know, you're going to be lucky to break even, but you can scam the system. You can push your book up. And I'm not saying scam, because it is a strategy, because what you want to do is get your book recognized. And the goal is to get Amazon to take the wave, but you have to create a wave of enough sales for Amazon to start pushing it itself. And so it is a strategy, but most people will just do the, hey, one day you are now number one in three categories. And guess what? Tomorrow you're not. And you know, you just paid a bunch of money and your expectations were that once you became a bestseller, it would be self-sustaining. If it was that easy, everyone would do it. So
can I ask you what you meant by the Amazon thing? Like, give you a push? Like, is it you sell a certain amount at on a certain week? You know, because I'm just curious about how that whole thing works. I don't actually understand that side of it.
Yeah, exactly. If you get, you know, X amount of sales in a small period of time, your book will shoot up the charts. And so if you can do enough of that over a sustained period of time, well, Amazon will actually take notice and start to send traffic your way, you know, start to advertise the book, if you will, however the algorithm works. And so if you, but most people only take that like one step. They get a few sales, get it up to number one for a certain time frame, you know, number one in these certain categories, but it's not enough to get any traction. And so they can spend enough to get it to number one and charge double that to their clients. And so it looks good, but at the end of the day, the client's disappointed because they're thinking bestseller means you're a bestseller and you're there forever. But the bestsellers that are being sold today, it's not a smart move most of the time. If you have the right strategy behind it and the pieces in place and enough budget, it can really make sense. But most of the time, people are running with that bestseller juice and just getting people hyped up when really they need to hear, you know what? Your book will not be read unless we have a really good plan. If it was this easy, everyone would do it, but it's not easy at all. Here's what we're going to do to really strategize and move you forward.
Hmm. So I just got two more questions for you, and thank you for your time and again, your openness and honesty. So what's next for Speak It to Book? Like, what's your strategy look like? It's kind of a vague question, I guess.
No, it's always a good time of year because toward the end of, you know, November, December, we keep our schedule open a little bit to work more as a team strategizing for the next year. And, you know, this next year we're faced again with, okay, we doubled again. How can we do it again? And every year it seems a little insurmountable. But it's becoming more and more an expectation that, no, this is going to happen. We just have to, you know, figure out what the keys are. And really for us, we've grown almost exclusively through internet marketing. Now we're starting to get into strategic partnerships. I can't name names yet just because of the confidentiality of it all, but we're working with some of the top kind of coaches in the coaching realm, some of the top, you know, internet marketers in that realm, really just high level, people who really love what we do. And we're basically looking to partner with them strategically. We're also getting into conferences more, getting ourselves out there more than just internet network marketing, because we find, I mean, there's just no replacement for meeting someone, shaking their hand, them seeing the passion for what you do, you seeing the passion for their store, connecting on a human level. Cause it's a lot harder to go the internet marketing route and come cold. And it's always like, Speak to Book, what in the world is this? And getting them all the way to, you know, hey, I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars to get this done. And so, those are ways that we're growing in the next year. Also, just we're third year, growing 100% every year, but you know, we're still in startup mode. I've yet to cut myself a salary because I want to make sure that the business is super healthy, that all my employees are taken care of. And so we've gone on a very slow route. And the thing that I'm probably most proud of is getting the right people in place. Like, I just love the people I work with. It makes every day so fun, you know. And we're still small enough to where I can be, you know, I can reach out to one of the employees and be like, hey, you know, I want to, you know, send you and your wife away on a weekend or something like that. And of course that doesn't have to go away, but, it's just such a fun, tight atmosphere that, when you love what you do, you can't help but do it to the best of your ability. And that's what I want to keep up more than anything.
So that's a great segue to my last question then, Caleb. How do you, for where you're at in your life, how do you define happiness?
Boy, happiness for me, that's a really good question. I mean, if I were to give the pat answer, well, I'll try and get deeper than that. I mean, for me, it's looking more and more like Jesus. To a lot of people, you know, they might think that's, you got your shit together and all this stuff, but really it doesn't come down to that for me. It's really, are you loving people genuinely? What are your motivations? Because I think that motivations can get in the way of a lot of things, whether it be you're motivated by money or motivated by some different motive, but truly to meet people where they are. This includes everyone from a stranger to my wife, who I've been married to for 10 years. Like, am I loving them in a way that's looking out for their best over than just what, like, I want? Like, I think that wants are very, important. You can't, just die to every need that you need as well, but to truly look after the good of other people and to give love to people. You can't beat that. To say, you know what, I don't need to watch 5 hours of my show every day and this and that. Like, I need to go out and be there for other people, mm-hmm. and be there for your friends who are hurting. And one of the best ways that my wife and I can do that is really be open and authentic ourselves to invite others to that place. Because over the years, I found out you've got your friendships, but then you have friendships that can go to another level. The people that you see yourself growing old with, because you are connecting at a place where you're actually healing to each other, mm-hmm. and helping each other through life instead of just having a good time. And we are all about having a good time. We absolutely love it. But there's a difference between those friends that you have a good time with and those that you can call up at 2 a.m. because you've formed this bond. Mm-hmm. And we're really, happiness is continuing to walk in that for us, to continuing to get to a place where we're open, authentic, and genuinely loving people because they're human beings, and meeting them where they're at and then growing together, whatever that looks like.
Thank you for that long detailed vision. That was good. Because I could see you were thinking about it as you were talking, right? Like, you were like, what does it actually mean to me, and what does it actually look like? And so you were trying to put words to the concept of happiness. And it's sometimes difficult for a lot of people I ask, because they don't really know. They've never thought about it. So thank you for that. And thank you, Caleb. Caleb Brakey. Got it. I'm like paranoid now. Thank you, Caleb Brakey, for your time, energy, wellness. Caleb Brakey, he is the CEO of I just lost it. Speak It to Book. I'm looking at your LinkedIn page, right? And it says experience. And then it's like lead book director. There's like 15 different things on that first line. So my eyes trying to scan to the title so I don't get it wrong, because I'm so paranoid of getting things wrong. So I'm like, speak it to book, speak it to book, speak it to book, speak it to book. And then I missed anything else. So I'll try that one more time. All right, here we go. One more time. Thank you, Caleb Brakey, CEO of Speak It to Book, for your time, energy, and willingness to sit down with me. Where else can my audience get a hold of you, Caleb?
Yeah, so you got speakittobook.com. We have a sister branch called sermontobook.com. Either one of those are great places to go. But also for podcast listeners, I set up a site at startyourbooktoday.com/video and blueprint. And that is actually modeled after Jeff Walker's product launch formula, if you've ever heard of him, where we basically have three videos that explain our process. There's PDFs, the whole bit. And then every once in a while, we'll open enrollment, which basically means we give our services away at a lower cost or more kind of value upgrades and stuff like that. But the main point of it is that they can go to there and learn a whole lot about our philosophy of sermon to book, about how we use books as bridges, not banks, the four paragraphs you need to figure out, hey, if your book is ready to go, and then kind of our blueprint and all the things that we do. So that's very valuable. startyourbooktoday.com/video and blueprint. And then also be on the lookout it's still a ways away, but I also have a 3-book contract with Revell, and have some suspense books coming out in 2019, starting the Sociopath series. So you'll get to see the suspense side as well of me as well. So if you like suspense, keep an eye out for The String coming out in 2019.
Awesome. Thank you, Caleb, for coming on the show. And your time and energy is so much appreciated.
Thank you very much, James. Awesome questions. Totally like different than most podcasts I'm on. I absolutely love it. I love how open you are and how just willing you are to go to places that most people don't. It's awesome. Thank you for that.
No worries. Have a great day.
You too.
And there you go. That is Caleb. At Speak It To Book, you can go to his website, speakittobook.com. All right. Listen, remember, blog. I feel like I should be wearing clogs this week, coming from Executives After Hours, as well as for the book, The Crucible's Gift, which will go on pre-order, from what I understand, with my publisher in March. So it can't come soon enough. But all right. Thank you guys so much. Humbled and pleasured to have you listen. And how about them Eagles? I'm going to hedge they won. I don't know. I'm recording this before the actual game, but go Eagles, Patriots. Anyhow, either team. All right. Bye.